Welcome, where business buying banter meets no BS reality. Get ready to dive into the world of buying and selling businesses without the fluff and fancy jargon. Whether you're a seasoned business buying pro or a curious aspiring entrepreneur, this is where the real talk happens. Because in business, there's no room for sugarcoating. Let's get down to the brass tacks.
Well, hello, everybody. The No Business Buying Banter YouTube channel that you should subscribe and like and invite all your friends to follow. What do you think about that, Richard?
I think it's great. I'm glad to see your energy. I'm guessing you had a gummy or two this morning because it's usually the No BS Business Buying Banter, and we went right into the no bullshit. So that's perfect. That's why I love you. Perfect.
You know, the only way you can get through SBA lending is having a gummy once in a while, Richard.
Well, I'm surprised. I actually heard that the only way to get into it is you got to start smoking crack because they could make it. they can make it pretty rough.
What is today's topic for our lovely loyal listeners out there?
This is all you, because this is how lenders look at financial statements and at what underwriters want to see. Now, I have a little better than a layman's view because I've done a bunch of these SBA deals, of course. However, you're in the trenches with this. So I think for prospective business buyers, understanding the documentation and how they look at statements, because how an underwriter looks at statements, my bet is entirely different than how a buyer looks at financial statements. And so why don't you start to take us through that? That'd be great.
Or a listing broker, might I add.
Oh, yeah. Add a third element of complexity. No problem.
You mean to tell me they don't do stated SBA business acquisition loans?
No.
Sorry. Stated income?
Hate to disappoint you.
Can you imagine if they did? Oh, we'd be in 08 again.
We'd be in 08 or in the 17th century.
Oh, good Lord. But anyways, yes. Good topic. What do the banks want to see? And in my opinion, they need to see it right away. meaning a good SBA lender or business acquisition loan consultant is looking at the actual IRS business tax returns of the proposed business listing as soon as possible, and not just relying on the broker recast summary at the back of the listing. I stress that. And how do you get around that, Richard? What would you say is the best way that you've seen over the years to get around that? Because that's the ask. Because otherwise, we're having all these conversations and we could be wasting time because the business doesn't have the cash.
Well, there's a couple things. One is obviously is timing, because often a business buyer is in the throes of a discussion. It may be in October, November of a year, and the business is used to filing its tax returns of September the following year. So getting those current is always a problem. Then you have the challenge of, never mind just the documents related to the underwriting, it's in the buyer's normal process of being able to evaluate the business to be able to have current statements. And so what I tell my clients, and I would hope that some brokers comply, but it's certainly, you know, I tell my clients, make this incumbent upon yourself, which is you as the buyer have to lay out, stroke, demand exactly what you need in financial statements, regardless of the road they're going down with financing. And especially if they're going down the road of potential SBA lending, because first of all, there's specific documentation and you have to do it early. Mm-hmm. And there's constantly delays, and especially at the lower market, they don't have their books and records ready. The accountant always defers or gets an extension. So regardless of the road, buyers need to be adamant about what they need. And if they're going down the road of an SBA loan, I mean, laying out exactly what they need is going to be very helpful for them, but they've got to do it immediately, as soon as the business is of interest to them, if possible.
I agree. And I would like to add, and the business brokers would appreciate this ad. If you are a business buyer, you can make those demands in a politically correct way if you've been vetted by an SBA lender or a consultant like myself, ensuring you pass the mustard for a personal guarantee with the SBA. There's a lot of questions that need to be asked, yeah. Right? And then furthermore, reviewing the business buyer's personal financial statement tells us a lot about the character, the down payment. Do they pay their bills on time? Do they have equity? Are they maxing out their credit cards? There's so much to look at before you make demands to a business broker that you want to see everything. You better be fully vetted and have a proof of funds letter in hand that I will provide once you pass the test as an eligible business buyer. Then make the demands.
Right.
You got the money. Yep. You got a proof of funds letter saying I got 90% of the capital to buy your business, Richard.
And
so
when
you want to show me the financials.
Yeah. And you know, you raise one really good point in all of it related to, you know, if you are a pre-approved buyer, now the business of course has to qualify, but if you're a pre-approved buyer, a proof of funds letter, given the competition that you have in the market amongst buyers, I mean, it elevates you, puts you right at the front of the class, right at the top of the list, because you have one of the two things that every seller or broker is going to look for, which is the proof of funds. The other one being that you're serious and can get to the finish line. But having the available capital is massive. So now let me ask you a question, which is related to personal financial statements, because buyers always ask me, and we provide a template in our course for a personal financial statement. Buyers always ask me one particular question. I always give them the same answer. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. They always ask me what should go into the personal financial statement. I tell them everything. And then it could be decided whether or not something should be removed or is not necessary. But throw everything on there. And then because it's up to someone like yourself in conjunction with a lender could decide what makes the most sense as far as what you submit, but omitting something is problematic. And that may be, whether it be, you know, I find that people could leave out something like a pending lawsuit. Like how does that weigh into something if they have the potential for a judgment or something? So there's what you have, what is known, and also what may be contingent, like no secrets. In other words, put everything out there. There should not be any secrets because the reality is they're going to find out. So there's no, you shouldn't be bullshitting this. And so what are your thoughts as far as laying it out? Anything that you see over and over again, or that, you know, people don't do or don't do well?
Mm-hmm. Everything you just said, my friend, is exactly why you've been doing this for 30 years and why you're so damn good at what you do. You have to put everything on that personal financial statement. If you're working with a credible SBA lender that is going to review that statement before packaging up the loan and submitting to underwriter, okay?
Right.
There's a lot we got to look at on that statement that can be corrected before we even go sourcing for the best bank loan capital,
right?
I can find other assets and have a discussion with buyers recommending them maybe to sell some of that and put cash in the bank to beef up their post-closing liquidity. Listen, business brokers need to do themselves a favor and stop pre-qualifying buyers just by making demands that you want to see their personal bank statements as to how much cash they have. There are so many different ways to look at that statement and massage it to the best ability to shine up that buyer to be the most eligible buyer in line with the rest to punch through to a final loan approval. Skeletons, I want to see them. I want to talk about them. Everything will be checked on the buyer side just as much as the seller side, which we'll get to. But everything will be checked. And a lot of times the banks, they won't do these final checks till we get closer to funding because they don't want to spend the money.
Of course, you know, not. Right.
Right. They want to make sure the valuation comes in first and everything is fine. Then they start doing all these background checks. And let me tell you, if you got skeletons in the closet, they're going to come.
Of course.
Out.
Yeah. You can't, you know, there's no more secrets. I guess the wild phrase, you can't get away with anything, but of course there's no secrets. The internet is the ultimate background check and they're going to find out, make no mistake. And then the problem is at that point, if you hide things, they're going to surface. Then you piss everybody off. You piss off the seller, you piss off the broker, you piss off a loan broker, someone like yourself. So you know what? You demonstrate a lack of trustworthiness. And so you really do yourself a terrible disservice because there's no getting away from it. It's going to be uncovered.
That's right.
Now, how do you deal with situations? So over the number of years, buyer relevant experience has become more important in these deals. Like many years ago, if you went down the road of an SBA loan, it didn't really weigh in as much as the buyer's relevant experience to the industry. And they've gotten much more specific. And certainly in some industries, I know, like, for example, on the real low end, like buying restaurant, like you absolutely need to have hospitality or restaurant or food service experience. Mm-hmm. So when you have a buyer who is competent, let's say good general business skills, a reasonable background, probably hasn't owned a business, but they've got some good general business skills, and there seems like there could be an application to the business that they're acquiring. And we've talked about buying the right business, whole other separate subject. But how important is the relevant experience? And how do you, in the work that you do, never mind the underwriter, a buyer comes to you, the financial statement holds up, you look at the business, how do you dissect their bio, if you will, and then reassemble it to make sure, with everything being above board, that it complies or it's going to meet the criteria of what an underwriter is going to look for as far as relevant experience is concerned?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And every state has specific rules with ownership when it comes to industries that require the owners to have a license in that industry. You know, I think of electrical, commercial electric, engineering, some businesses. I funded a deal 3 years ago where the seller was the licensed engineer and the state required an owner has to have that engineer background. Right. It all has to be per the state guidelines. Well, my buyer, Richard, he didn't have it, but he had all the other goods. He had management experience, a resume of accolades of taking teams and moving them to the next level. He had cash. He had good credit. He knew how to market. He understood financials because part of his resume of his professional experience was budgets. I mean, he was an underwriter's dream that really knows numbers. We always talk about you have to know numbers. So what did we do? Well, we collaborated, and the business that was selling, the owner was taking like a $300,000 salary. It was just a cash cow of a business. The buyer, the proposed buyer without the license, all he needed was like $150,000 salary to replace his current salary when he quits his job. So I said, why don't you search and network for hiring an engineer and then propose for them to be like 2% owner?
Right.
And that will pass the state's guidelines. The underwriter will be comfortable. Some banks may want that engineer at 2%. They may want them to personally guarantee if they're the engineer. Some don't.
So would they personally guarantee in that case? Sorry to interrupt you, but a question in that case, because personal guarantees are always a concern. If they own 2% of the business, what are they guaranteeing? Are they guaranteeing the loan commensurate with their holdings or the whole thing?
It's bank by bank choice.
Okay.
It can be
as low as what their holdings are.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Exactly. But we got the deal done.
Great.
And the business is doing well. I checked in on him and he's soaring like an eagle. We structured an employment contract, the buyer and his attorney, and had the seasoned engineer sign the contract the day before closing. So everything was all in order. I mean, so I hope that answers your question. I want your listeners to understand you don't necessarily need to have the license to match the industry. Auto repair, right? Auto repair industry. You don't have to have the experience under the hood to change the oil and fix the car.
I could do it. Yeah, I can. But I used to do it as a kid.
There you go. But if you know your numbers,
you are right.
And you know how to take care of people, and you have sales and marketing background, you're going to be a fit to acquire that business, auto repair business.
Right.
Okay. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, I when I was a kid, I used to work in a gas station. I also put that was the days when you actually put fuel gas into people's cars. There was no such thing as self-serve. So believe it or not, isn't that crazy? And I used to get a tip, like if I had some, you know, if it was decent, people used to tip me a dime. Sometimes a quarter was like, they must have money.
Listen, I remember that as a little girl. Yeah. They would wipe your windshield.
That was me. Check the tires. I had one guy when I used to do his oil change, and the oil change, I think the oil change was $6. And he used to tip me $2. It was like unbelievable. I used to just wait for him to come in. It was only twice a year, but $2 was pretty big at that point. Hate to age myself. Awesome. So now if we go back to this with the relevant experience, leaving aside licensing issues, in a generic business, no license outside of basic occupational licenses. There's no trade licenses required to operate the business, distribution company, manufacturing, retailer, whatever the case may be. No required state or trade licenses required. The relevant experience piece. Is it a case of that, like, by and large, if someone has some general business experience, whether on their own or for someone, are they typically, I know the answer will probably be depends on each underwriter, but are they typically going to be okay as far as qualifying to be able to demonstrate that they can operate the business?
Yes.
Okay.
And we want to see management experience all day long. Got to have that on the resume. That's really important. You got to have a love of people and how to manage people, you know? Let's circle back to now the seller side, their financials. What do the banks look at? Right. I want to share a story with you. You'll get a kick out of this. I had two times in my career, business listings, the sellers give us copies of their tax returns the last 3 years. And we review them and we use them with the underwriter to ensure there's enough cash flow at the bottom line plus the add backs, right? Well, two times in my career, the sellers somehow must have thought we don't check those tax returns with the IRS. So for all those business sellers out there who think they could give a second set of tax returns.
So they gave you a bullshit tax return.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's the technical term.
Say that again. Yeah, Say that again. I need to hear it again.
They gave you a bullshit tax return. Wow.
It happens.
Of course. Of course.
So, yeah. And you talk about, again, banks typically won't verify electronically those tax returns with the IRS till we get closer to closing again, because there's additional cost. Which the proposed buyer will have to pay. But man, when that crap comes back, it is so frustrating.
Of course. So, of course. You invest all this time.
Who's responsible? I mean, obviously the seller is, but don't you think we need to do a better job before we list the businesses to make sure somehow that they match?
Well, here's the thing. It's a very simple thing to get over, regardless whether it's the seller, whether there's a broker involved or what have you. There's a form called a 4506. It's an IRS form that you could submit that I can, as long as the seller signs it, any individual can request a transcript of the first page of the tax return for any business for any number of years. It's part of due diligence, which I tell buyers, you request the 4506 form, which reconfirms you get a confirmation from the IRS, a copy of the transcript, first page, and it matches up to the tax return or doesn't that you've received from the seller. Now, here's a cool twist on it. Again, I always tell the buyers, and it's in our course, you request this 4506. Now, should a broker be asking for it? Of course they should be asking for it once they get the engagement. I think it would be impossible and would be reckless almost for a broker before they get the engagement, because they'll piss off the seller, but you want to get the engagement, then request, look, we're going to need this 4506 as part of the equation. It's not like I'm not trusting you, even though they want to validate it for themselves, but we're going to need this, so I need you to sign it. And then you submit it. So if I want a 4506, you send me your tax return, you're selling me your business, you give me the tax return, I get you to sign the 4506 and it pledges it to me. I submit it to the IRS. I get the transcript of the tax return back. Now, I've done it as a buyer. I've bought 13 companies and one co-invest. For the ones that I've done in America, I've always requested the 4506 form. And here's the thing. When I tell a seller I need the 4506, when they turn around and they sign it really quickly, in most cases, I haven't even submitted it.
Right. Right.
Because if there's any push, if they're happy to sign it, then you know it's legit, right? There's been no pushback. That aside, you've got to be cautious. Yeah. I've never had pushback signing the 4506, so I never worried about it. But the case that you cited happens, and it happens frequently.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up the 4506 because I want business buyers to understand as well. We're doing IRS checks on your personal tax return as the buyer.
Of course.
To make sure they're filed.
Of course.
Your income reported matches.
And you don't owe alimony and child support.
Thank you. Here's another story. I had two partners purchasing a gymnastic center a couple of years ago. And the partner, she was older, had a lot of the running a gymnastics center experience. So we needed her for the deal. And she had the cash to put down. The other partner did not have cash, was an employee at a gymnastics center, but he needed her because she had the cash. So we're getting ready to close.
Good partnership. Yeah. Perfect. Right? Yeah. Thank perfect. You.
We're getting ready to close. And of course, the bank is going to verify their tax returns. Hers came back not found. There were 2 years.
She didn't file.
She went through a sad scenario. Her husband unexpectedly passed away like 2-3 years prior. And it kind of made sense because it just seemed like a lot of collecting her information took a lot of energy for me to get her to think straight. She just seemed like she was still in her grieving process. But when we found out the taxes weren't filed, she had no clue. And it was discovered in piles in her kitchen. She went through piles of paperwork and found letters from the IRS after her husband died asking for more information to properly file her personal tax returns. So curveballs.
Curveballs. But you can get caught up. Right. But you can get caught up. At least she didn't evade tax. She just didn't file. One's a lot worse than the other. And
thank you.
Yeah. I mean, so the lessons with all of this is get going early in the documentation, request it, if not demand it, align themselves with someone like yourself to make sure it gets submitted. Personal financial statements, no BS, include everything and let someone such as yourself determine whether or not anything should be augmented. Maybe you may want to look at selling some assets, whatever the case may be, but get this done early. Get a 4506 form, understand the importance of relevant business experience, and by all means, get the information aggregated to someone like yourself who can assess the whole situation, because there's no use going down the road with the hope and expectation that you're going to be able to finance this through the SBA if the documentation doesn't back up.
That's right.
What the purchase price is going to be of the terms.
That's right, Richard. Thank you. And I would add to that, a good step for buyers and sellers to take away from this show today, you can go to irs.gov and pull transcripts of your own business filed tax returns, personal and business. Pull them, because there were times during the pandemic, even in 21, pushing into 22, we all heard the IRS was backed up terribly. It was taking forever for them to file tax returns because of the shortage of the people, you know, closures, office closures and such. Mistakes happen. There are people that still U.S. Postal snail mail tax returns to the IRS.
Right, of course.
They get lost.
Yeah.
If you're not following up as a buyer or as a seller with the IRS, geez, is it on record? And does it match with what I have on record? You need to do that, because these are the things that will bite you in the dupa if you don't have it cleared up ahead of time.
Okay. Okay. So to avoid
back
to the dupas. Now it's D-O-O-P-A.
Yeah, something like that.
Got it. Okay. Well, that's a perfect, perfect summary and apps, and you know, and people need to just do this in a well-organized, well-thought-out way.
Yeah.
And that's why obviously someone like yourself is so terrific to bring into the equation, because at least you could manage not only the expectations for people, but you could manage the process and the paper flow. And that's wonderful. I know everything that we've been able to dispense today is going to be very helpful for aspiring business buyers. So that's great. Thanks, Deb.
You got it. You know, and before we wrap up our show, Richard, tell us about seller's guide that we offer on these shows for people to scan this QR code. 10 things sellers don't tell you. Let's hear the scoop on that.
Here's the scoop. So the scoop is pretty straightforward. You know, I've been doing this for 34 years. You and I collaborated on putting a report together to really help people, specifically business buyers, as you're going through the process, understand that most sellers are going to be straightforward, helpful, and disclose information. Not all of them are. You cited a couple of examples, but there's certain things, for example, that none of them are going to disclose. And it may not, it's material to you as the buyer, the business. Sometimes it's material to the transaction itself, but related to seller terms, related to relationships with certain suppliers or customers. There's just a lot of information that as a buyer, you need to uncover it. It's not incumbent upon the seller to disclose it. If you don't ask the question, they don't have to forward the information to you. They're not being secretive. You just haven't asked the question. That's very different than asking them, are there any lawsuits? It's very different if you ask them, are you concerned? You know, what is the relationship with the customers? Is there anything in peril? Is there any customers that whose business is down significantly enough that you worry about losing them? If you don't ask those questions, they don't have to tell you. And there's 10 specific areas. Each one has a drop down to it. So about a 40-page report. If you're thinking about buying a business, you got to read this report. I mean, it's going to be enormously helpful. And then we'll get the QR code on there. But failing that, if they, I think they could post it or Sia can put the QR code on there. Then it's very easy for people to download it. You get it right away. So it's download and very easy to read and very helpful.
Always be learning.
Always be learning, baby.
Yeah. And in closing, I would just like to thank our sponsors of the headbands and handkerchiefs. I've been calling it H&H.
H&H.
No Bullshit Business Buying Banter Show. Our sponsors are Brilliant Beam Media. Sia and her team are the behind the scenes IT tech supporting us so we can put this show on every week. Every Thursday, you find us live streaming at 2 p.m. Central Time on all your favorite social media channels, primarily LinkedIn and YouTube for Richard on his channel. What's your channel handle? Do you know what
Richard
it is?
Richard Parker 1 on LinkedIn. There you go. And it's 2 o'clock Eastern, I think 1 o'clock Central, 2 o'clock Eastern.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah. And my handle is Biz Buyers Ally, B-I-Z Buyers Ally.
Which is exactly what you are.
I have to be. And then our other sponsor is Raquel Connections Corner. She has a growing community. My gosh, approaching 60,000 followers. And she has a show every other Saturday at 10 a.m. Central Time. It's a great little community if you want to network as a small business owner, getting to know others. I want to thank them both for sponsoring our show. Any closing thoughts before we wrap this up? Any comments to sellers or buyers, Richard, on the subject of what do banks look at?
Well, they're going to look at everything. So make sure you provide everything, provide it early. Provide it, address it quickly, make sure it's 100% legit, and know that without question, anything you hide is coming to the surface. So just be completely transparent and get on top of all the, as a buyer, get on top of everybody to make sure the information is provided to you expeditiously.
And if you don't, you're going to be bitten in the dupa.
Ooh-ah! Okay, then.
All right, folks, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week, Thursday, 2 p.m. Central. H&H is out of here.
Bye, Deb.
Bye.